Okay, we're good to go.
Great. All right, well, I will call this meeting to order on April 7th. Continuing
Doug,
with...
I looked the minutes over in there, as I remember, so I'll move adoption to the minutes.
I will second that motion, Doug. Any discussion on the minutes? See none. All those in favor of approving the minutes say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Doug.
Aye, Josh.
Great. The minutes are approved. Moving to the next item on the agenda, approval of the loans. There are 11 loans in place. Is
this
there
is
a motion
Doug,
to...
I'll move adoption of 7 loans for $7 million. I mean, 11. I move adoption of 11 loans for $7 million. I'm sorry.
I will second that motion of approving 11 loans at a little over $7 million. Rich, do you want to maybe walk us through some of these loans or highlight anything?
There's not really a whole lot to highlight. I think that the ones, they're all pretty standard fare. I think the one thing I would like to mention is that most of these loans are loans that have been approved in the past and are being reapproved at the lower interest rate of 2.75, which the board did about a month ago.
Rich, this is Josh. I have a quick question. Some of the loans are at 2.75% and others are at 2.5%. Is that because of the duration, or does that also reflect the time of the application?
Normally it would affect both, but in this case, 5 years, it's the duration of the loans. The 5-year loan right now is at 2.5%, and loans between 6 and 10 years are at 2.75%. But it is also true that what we do when we lock the rate at our current rate structure at the time that the application is submitted, and we lock that rate for a period of 60 days. So if it's a situation where rates are changing, like they have been in the past, some loans may be at different rates than others. At that point, we give the borrower the option to restart the loan at the lower rate, and some do, and some decide to continue at the old higher rate because of timing considerations.
Okay, and we always make it clear to the borrower when there's a difference. Is that right?
We do. Yeah.
This is Doug. My only comment is I wish I was in the truck business. Everybody's buying trucks. There's at least 5 trucks there. And my big question is, hello?
Yeah, Doug, can you hear us?
My big question is, why does one fire truck cost $300,000 and the other fire truck $700,000? There are 2 fire trucks and one costs twice as much.
I think that there's a large difference. Yeah, there's a big difference in the type of fire trucks and their associated cost.
I know, I'm just being difficult.
Any other questions for Rick about the loans set forth? All right, seeing none, is there a motion to approve the loan?
Doug, I vote yes.
I'll second that. All those in favor of approving the loan say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Hi, Josh.
Well, we already had a motion before, but anyway, I vote yes to approve them.
Great. So the motion carries and we'll approve the loan. Moving on to ratifying the loan rate. And Rich, do you want to maybe set the stage for both the kind of increase in interest rates as well as the cap? Doug and Josh, I'm sure you guys have been following the market, are just aware of how the market has been really up and down over the last couple of weeks. And with the onset of COVID, it's kind of put this unique strain on the market. And so this is kind of a precaution, I think, to continue to protect the state trust fund loan program while making sure it's serving the municipalities and community across the state. So, Rich, do you want to maybe just provide some additional details around this?
Sure. That was a great, great background, Sarah. What happened is, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, is that we reduced interest rates to market rates about a month ago. In the meantime, there has been some liquidity issues in the market, as you may have read about. And one of those was, you know, caused a disruption in municipal, long-term municipal rates. We felt that the trust fund loan program could be at risk from large municipalities proposing large loans that would use up our remaining liquidity. And we wanted to make certain that the loan program remained active for the majority of our customers. One of the ways that we did that was to raise long-term interest rates. And the other way was to impose a soft cap of $5 million per loan so that the investment committee would need to approve each one of those applications, those larger applications, before they moved forward through the loan process.
Yeah, Rich, and this is Sarah. I just want to maybe also chime in that as the loan program continues, it would be interesting to see if we see more lending with regards to supporting communities addressing COVID. Doug and Josh, just to kind of give you some additional insight, and Rich, I don't know if I mentioned this to you. I have been having conversations with the county and municipal treasurers who manage the local finances for their communities, and one of the things that they flagged for me is the extension of property taxes. So a handful of communities across the state of Wisconsin, their property taxes are due in April. And with the extension of that now being delayed till July or late payments coming in, some of them are worried about making their school distribution in May. So a lot of these communities, they get their property taxes in April, and then they actually distribute that money to their local schools in May. And so some of them have been talking about even cash flow issues. And would the state trust fund loan program be a potential option for bridge financing? In addition, we know that the state of Wisconsin over the weekend was declared an emergency under the FEMA guidelines for the federal government. And so now communities can apply for these community disaster loans, but sometimes the distribution it takes a while to get to these communities, and so the BCPL State Trust Fund Loan Program might be a good tool for them while they're waiting for their federal money to come in to support them as they navigate COVID-19. So just want to kind of provide that additional information because I think the precautions that we are taking here will help protect and sustain the program in a fiduciary manner. Any questions, Josh and Doug?
No, only question. Okay. A little complicated, but I trust you guys.
The only quick question I have is, so it's the changes to the rates that are reflected here were made by the investment committee on March 27th, is that right?
Yes, yes. That's correct.
No,
okay, and just so... Oh, sorry.
They were made in accordance with the current delegation from the board. So is the executive secretary acting in concert with the board chairman based on the recommendation of the investment committee?
Okay, and just so I understand how that links up with the loans above that we just approved, these rates were changed after those loans were locked in at the rates that they're at. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay.
And Josh, I think to your point, this is where the investment committee has been meeting every other week, and we talk about these rates because we just want to make sure that we're competitive with the market. But the market is constantly changing, and as a result, we have to adapt our rates to stay competitive and but also to make sure that we're upholding our fiduciary responsibilities, and so people don't take advantage of the program.
Has the amount that you are able to adjust the rate, the 1%, has that been sufficient even with the current volatility in the market?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
So the process now is we starting, and Tom, as counsel, make sure I'm understanding this correctly, starting on March 27th, we did put these rates in place, but now the motion that we need from the board is to ratify both the increased interest rates for the long term, both the 6 to 10 year and the 11 to 20 year, but then we also need to make sure we approve that soft cap of $5 million.
That is correct.
Okay. So Doug and Josh, that proposed resolution is actually at the bottom of the packet, so I'm just going to read it. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Commissioners of Public Lands ratifies the changes in the BCPL State Trust Fund Loan Program, with annual interest rates set to be between 2.5% for two-year loans, 2.5% for 3 to 5 year loans, 3% for 6 to 10 year loans, and 4% for 11 to 20 year loans. Be it further resolved that the BCPL Investment Committee shall approve any loan application above $5 million in consideration of current liquidity constraints within the investment portfolio before such application may be processed in the ordinary course of business. Is there a motion to approve that resolution?
I so move.
Doug, I'll second.
Great. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye, Doug.
Aye, Josh.
Aye, Sarah. The resolution passes. Thank you. Moving on to the next item of business under new business is consideration on and a potential vote on a special distribution with the Common School Fund. And so I just wanted to kind of give a little bit of background about this because we should probably emphasize this special distribution when you were reading your packet. So as many of you know, we are in unprecedented times as we're navigating COVID-19 here in Wisconsin. And quite frankly, these unprecedented times also ask for unprecedented actions. And when we think about containing the virus and the steps that have been taken here in Wisconsin, that has had an impact on our beneficiaries, and our beneficiaries being our public schools and our kids. And so one of the things that I did was I've been talking with teachers and with media specialists, and they talk about how they're doing everything they can to support teachers with distance learning tools, but they don't have enough resources that they need. And two people that to note that I spoke with, one was with the WIMSA president. And when I was talking to her about how media specialists and librarians were supporting teachers with meeting their e-learning needs, at one point she got emotional on the phone and talked about how stressful it's been and that they know that there is this digital divide and that kids don't have hotspots to learn from, that they're struggling with getting access to e-books, and it's been really hard. Honestly, further conversation with Superintendent Taylor, she talked to me about how they're doing all that they can, but they know that there is so much more that is needed. And so in conversations with Tom, Rich, and the investment committee, we have an obligation to our beneficiaries, and honestly, it's prudent for us to take action in this kind of historical way, because I really believe now is a time where our beneficiaries need some extraordinary help and for us to kind of set up and do that. So the investment committee We did meet last week to really discuss what would be fiscally prudent if we did provide some sort of special distribution to schools that would not impact the fund for future distribution. And that's how we came up with the number of $5.25 million. And Richard is going to kind of go and explain a little bit more of that in detail. But I just want to kind of emphasize that I think we're really uniquely positioned to make a positive difference for our beneficiaries during this crisis. And media specialists now more than ever need these resources for hotspots, ebooks, and distance learning tools. And so I really hope that and urge the board to pass this special distribution so we can make a difference, a prudent difference to our beneficiaries. So that's a little bit of background, kind of what we are looking at, what we are facing. And Tom, as you want to provide some maybe additional context to this?
I think you hit most of it. Like I said, you know, we've been in contact with DPI, and that that communication, I think, is something that makes our relationship a bit different. You know, in my in past years, when I've gone to Western States Land Commissioners Associations, I've been amazed that once the management of the money leaves the hands of the Land Commission, which normally has a close relationship with those educational beneficiaries, that conversation tends to stop. But because of the fact that we have that close relationship, it makes us, I think, much more acutely aware of what's going on with the beneficiaries and what their needs are at any given point in time. So that's why I felt it was important that we consider what we could do in this situation. In terms of taking a closer look at it, I mean, obviously, in order to make this happen, several factors had to come into play. First of all was that contact with our beneficiaries. Secondly, the fact that we've been prudent and cautious in our management of the fund. You know, even though there's been a lot of losses suffered by other endowments and funds over the last couple months, we're only down less than 2%. And I think having come through this tough period in that good of shape, I think gave us more confidence that the smoothing account for the Common School Fund was sufficient to recommend a supplemental distribution. We took a hard look at how the additional distribution would impact the management of the fund. We looked at whether making a distribution of this particular size would impact our plans for diversification, and would it still provide the schools and libraries with a reliable stream of funding. And finally, you know, we're constantly looking at how the fund is performing and what the markets are doing, and we're always trying to look down the road and see what's coming in the future. And so in the midst of all the chaos in the markets and government and people's lives, I think this is wonderful that our staff has stepped up to be able to do this, and I'd like to thank them all personally for their work on this. So that's all I've got to say on it.
Thanks, Tom. Rich, any other additional thoughts or comments you want to provide the board?
The only thing that I might add is that as of the end of the last fiscal year, June 30th of 2019, we had approximately $3 million in extra smoothing funds. The smoothing fund is calculated at 50% of the following year's distribution, which this year's distribution is $38.2 million. And so the smoothing fund balance was projected to be a minimum of $19.1 million. We actually had about $22 million in there at the end of the year. And so this additional supplemental distribution will be utilizing that $3 million and not put a real negative impact on any future distributions.
So, Doug, any questions? I think one of the other things just to mention is that the timing of this works out. If the board does approve this special distribution of $5.25 million, the money would be in 2 DPI by the end of, it goes from the DCPL to DPI on the 15th of April, right, Tom?
Yes, yes. I know Denise was planning on making it before the 15th, so I don't know if that means tomorrow or Thursday or Friday, but it will be there before the 15th.
And then DPI gets that money and gives it to schools, and they turn it around right away, and that has been part of our conversation, is to make sure that they could quickly deploy it, and media specialists across the state have said that they have a lot of ways in which they could use that to help them with their e-learning needs. So it's not a process that if we vote on it today, it would take a while. It's instant resource. It's relief that would be provided quickly. The special distribution would be used in a relatively short time period.
Well, this is Doug. Given the fact that our distribution of 38,000 or something like that is a record distribution, I'm a little surprised that we have to give them extra money. And the schools are not in session right now, so I would think that some of their expenses would be lower than normal. So I'm a little perplexed by the request.
So, Doug, this is Sarah. One of the requirements, or one of the areas that librarians and media specialists purchase, are e-learning or distance learning tools, so hotspots for kids, e-books. And schools actually are still in session just because they're not meeting in their classroom.
Please stop. I understand that. But they also, somebody will have less expenses in the classroom than they normally would. So some of that could go for the distance learning costs that they might have. Now, I presume that they're all honest people, so there's no problem here. And as long as we have enough money in our so-called smoothing fund, you guys have decided to do this. I won't make a big fuss about it. I was just surprised.
This is Josh. So first I would ask that everybody, when people start talking, that we all allow others to finish. My understanding is that schools are taking on additional costs, in part because, well, they have fixed costs, and they are needing to incur new fixed costs now to make sure that, for example, students who don't have access to technology that they can use for remote learning are able to get that technology. So there are new fixed costs that hadn't been anticipated in their budget. So I think this is a great idea. I also would suggest that we continue the conversation about this issue with the schools, because I understand the reasoning behind being careful about not allowing our smoothing fund balance to go too low, but I also think continuing to hear from schools about what additional costs they have, so that if their need for resources is so much greater now than it would normally be, and then that it may be in the future, that we're there to provide support. I think that's, although obviously smoothing fund is primarily meant to assist with budgeting year to year, I think this is a really important use of those funds, and that we should, if it makes sense, assess whether additional support is appropriate.
Josh, this is Sarah. No, one of the things that we've been working really hard on is continuing, as Tom said, we have a really good relationship with DPI, and we're continuing to, I think, strengthen that relationship, to make sure we understand what their needs are and, how we can, be supportive understanding that we do have to, we want to follow our asset allocation and make sure that we're appropriately planning any sort of distribution. But yes, I think continuing those communications and making sure we are there for our beneficiaries is important, which is why I am glad that the investment committee was able to meet on short notice and work with DPI to come up with a recommendation of $5.25 million. Any other questions? Seeing none, there is a proposed resolution in your packet. If it's okay with the board, I'm just going to summarize. So is there, I move to approve a 5.25 special distribution to address the COVID-19 e-learning needs from the BCPL fund.
This is Josh. I second, but I do have a quick edit, I think, to it.
Sure.
After the paragraph that begins with "now, therefore, be it resolved," in the following paragraph, there's a reference to, I think it's meant to be a reference to a particular section in BCPL's investment policy. So I think we just need to add this section.
You're absolutely correct, Josh. When I drafted that, I thought there was a section number associated with it, but there is not a section number or letter associated with it. So I would just strike the word section from that.
Okay, so my proposed amendment will be to strike the word section.
I think, Josh, we can take that as a friendly amendment and make the update in our records.
Great.
Thanks. So seeing the motion, all those in favor of approving the 5.25 special distribution, say aye.
Doug, aye.
Hi, Josh.
Hi, Sarah. Well, thank you, everyone, and thanks to Rich, Denise, and the team for working on this. I think this is a bright light that we can do for our beneficiaries. So thank you. Moving on to the next item on the agenda, which is the presentation of the investment policy. So I just want to kind of, I guess, highlight this has been something that the BCPL has been working really, really hard on over the last few months, and I do think we have a really good policy that will help guide BCPL investments moving forward. Just a few areas that I do want to highlight that have, I think, made this policy really why it's better than what we had previously and kind of strengthened our overall IPS. So the first is on governance. And so I'm sure, Doug and Josh, you might have read this over the weekend. It reads like a novel, as you know. But on page 11, we spent a lot of time kind of further clarifying governance and what are some roles and responsibilities that we need to think through between the investment committee, how we manage that $1.2 billion, and how we are coordinating that with the fiduciary responsibilities of the commissioners. And I think that we did a really good job in kind of further revising and clarifying that. The second area that I think we did a really good job on is refining our investment philosophy. And doing that in a way that really looks at today's just financial environment and making sure we are keeping up with best practices as well as just kind of clarifying things with regards to our fiduciary duties. We did that in really three big ways under investment philosophy. The first you'll see is under our asset allocation and the diversification sections. I mean, that those two areas are really the bread and butter of how we think through the management of this fund, as well as ensuring strong returns for our beneficiaries. The second area under our investment philosophy that I thought was a really good step was just clarifying and capturing the importance of transparency and accountability. We know when it comes to public funds, a lot of times public funds and public fund management are under scrutiny for lack of transparency and accountability. And by us kind of capturing that that is something that's important to us, I think it's our responsibility to make sure we uphold that and do that whenever, wherever we can. And then the third area, which is really what makes the BCPL fund so unique, is kind of talk about the history and commitment to Wisconsin. As you all know, this fund was created when the state was created, and it has not only a strong relationship with our public schools who are our beneficiaries, but also in how we make returns, which is through the state trust fund loan program. And so we talk about how that is an important piece of what we do with our fund, but further talks about when it is within reason continuing to make additional investments in Wisconsin kind of through our prudent investment authority. And so that to me was a big and continued step in our commitment to the state and to the kids of Wisconsin. And then the last piece that I just want to also mention is under our the risk section. We kind of talk about risks in a way that were mentioned previously, but we also include things that a lot of investment funds are looking at now through environmental impact, social impact, and governance impact, and how that, how those risks do play a role in our fiduciary duty. So those were some additional things that were added in this revised IPS that you have in front of you, and I think it's a really good policy and has set us up for success. So with that, Tom and Rich, I'll just move it over to you to further maybe highlight some things on the IPS document.
Rich, do you want to take it away since you're the editor?
I can. You know, the only, you know, if anybody has any questions as they read through this over the next few weeks, as they get comfortable with it before the next board meeting, please give me a call or shoot me an email, and I can certainly explain why certain language was used and what we were thinking about when we put this together. I do believe Sarah did give a good a review of some of the substantive changes that we've made over the past few months, and I do believe that the policy has been improved because of those changes. I included a list of some of those changes in the board packet. The major changes, I don't think I need to read this, but you know, vary quite a bit over the entire length of the strategy. But you know, we had a good policy before. It is our responsibility to improve that policy as we move forward and things change throughout the market. And I think that we have done a good job in that.
This is Doug.
Yep, go Doug.
Well, yeah, I read the parts about changes. The other 39 pages I didn't read, but I went through them quickly and scanned what was in them. My first thought is that the major change seems to be giving more authority to the investment committee and taking it away from the board. As a board member, we always have to worry about that. Investment committee is silent. Okay.
In some areas, Doug, I agree that it does, but I don't think it's in as many areas as you think it is. So I'm always cognizant of that myself, and I always try to make sure that we're navigating that balance in an appropriate way. So.
And then, I guess we don't have, we're not talking about this, I suppose, but the one thing I noticed along towards the end of the document is that there's, in most all of our funds, the allocations that we've approved are different than the current allocations. So you folks are going to be so-called readjusting those, I assume. Do I understand that correctly?
That is correct. We would be readjusting it. And part of the reason for that is when we started back in 2016, we were just starting on the path of moving away from completely in fixed income. And so we've made some progress, and the markets have changed a bit, and these changes to asset allocation reflect those changes in the market and reflect the fact that the smoothing funds have more money in them, and we can afford to diversify a bit more. So,
right, and these future allocations, we've already approved all those, so there's no reason to discuss them. The main thing we're doing is moving towards more investment in the normal market and away from investment in the schools and in bonds, which are safer. So I guess we're deciding to take more risk. And as an old fogey, that always worries me. But we approved those before, so we don't need to argue about it. I just observed those as I read through it again this morning.
Doug, this is Sarah. I just want to actually make a comment in regards to your question about governance and more authority with the investment committee. I think one of the things that this policy captures that was not practiced previously is that the Board of Commissioners of Public Lands does have a representative on the investment committee. So before that, that is something that is new in this policy. The commissioners did not have either a representative or a commissioner that served on the investment committee, but now in today's IPS, as written, this revised version, the commissioners do.
And that person is you?
Right now, that's me.
Yeah, which is fine.
So, I think
so you're watching out for us. I trust you to do that.
Thank you, Doug. I appreciate that.
I have a quick question. Would it be possible for us to get a red line comparing this to the prior policy, or is it sufficiently, are pieces sufficiently moved around that that's not helpful for understanding the changes?
I think that'll be possible, Josh. It may not be a perfect redline copy because there have been so many changes, and it gets a little messy, but we'll do what we can tomorrow or the next day to get you something that will point out the majority of changes, yes.
Thank you.
So the goal for this item on the agenda today was just to provide an overview of those changes and to answer any high-level questions. The goal is at our next board meeting to move forward with approving the IPS or making any amendments that Doug or Josh, you see would be appropriate. So I guess if you have any questions, please reach out to Tom and Rich so we can do the best we can with trying to approve this at our next board meeting.
Right. Yeah, I'm looking at these allocations again because as I was listening to you, and we go from about 80% of fixed income, including the school loans, to only 30%, and we go from 0 to 70% in the high risk public sector. So I guess that's got to be interesting.
Yeah, and Doug, I think if this would be helpful, Rich and Tom could sit down with you and walk through the asset allocation. The asset allocation that is set forth, there's really two interesting aspects of it in this updated policy. I think one is just always trying to think through how do we invest in a way that also increases our long-term capital gains so we can build the principal of the fund, not just distribution, but also principal, because when you build principal, that will allow us to increase our return.
Sarah, you can stop because I remember those conversations back weeks and weeks ago. So I understand why that was done. It's just in looking at it, it was, again, as a conservative guy, I was a little shocked that we had decided to move so much money into equities and alternatives. But we'll keep our fingers crossed. I understand the reason for it. I just hope we are successful.
Sure. And we also have the smoothing account, Doug, as you know, too, to help address the risk. Okay. Any other questions on the investment policy? All right. Seeing none, we'll move into routine business. Rich, the Chief Investment Officer's report.
I would just like to point out that we've been moving forward with acquiring ETFs and mutual funds in accordance with our policy, and we've been accelerating that now that prices are more reasonable in today's market. But one of the things that I really wanted to point out was the overall yield for our ETF and mutual fund portfolios. You'll notice on the last board packet from early March, the yield on our portfolio was about 4% overall between the corporate debt, domestic, and global equities. And in today's portfolio, you know, that has moved up substantially to 4.6%. And so I just wanted to point out the fact that when prices go down, yields go up, and that can be a good thing for our beneficiaries moving forward.
Any questions for Rich? Thanks, Rich. Moving to the Executive Secretary's report. Tom?
What I wanted to give you was just a quick overview of what's happening at BCPL during this time of working safer at home. You know, we were able to deploy desktops and monitors and laptops and iPads to make sure that all of our employees could keep working remotely. We processed $91 million in payments on our 1,100 trust fund loans and 730 customers. We processed over 50 state trust fund loan applications. We disbursed 13 of those. We deployed $40 million in investments in real estate and $60 million in investments in exchange-traded funds, even $600,000 in investments in previously committed venture capital funds. Denise was able to get our March financials reconciled. We signed contracts for 133 acres of timber, and we finished marking 80 of those acres for sale during this time as well. We conducted due diligence on 400 acres of trust lands in Ashland and Iron counties that may be sold or exchanged, and we conducted due diligence on thousands of acres of forest land group properties that BCPL staff is reviewing as proposed acquisitions for board consideration. We transitioned to an updated automated continuous forest inventory system. And this was all in addition to the ongoing duties that shape our lives every day. So this past week, we were able to close the last phase of that Minocqua Timberland transaction. The exchange with the National Park Trust had been delayed on their end for a couple of months. However, they got their act together, and we closed on the exchange of four of our parcels that will ultimately go to the National Park Service in return for 228 acres of timberland in Iron County. And I have to say that this transaction is a testament to Micah Zeitler's creativity and his perseverance, and I'd like to thank Micah publicly for his work on this. And by the way, that Oneida County part of the larger Minocqua timber transaction was the subject of an inquiry from State Senator Tiffany. I think all three of you received a copy of that letter, and he cited the fact that the town of Little Rice adopted coordination resolutions and ordinances in 2010, and he asked why BCPL did not comply with those coordination resolutions and ordinances. Since I've been around for a while, I was aware what he meant by coordination. And they were the subject of a serious controversy back then. At the time that those resolutions and ordinances were adopted by the town, the former Attorney General J.B. Van Holland actually issued a published AG's opinion that such resolutions and ordinances had no effect. So in my response to the Senator, I reaffirmed our commitment to transparency, noted that I was unfamiliar with the specific documents and resolutions he cited, but did notify him that I was aware of the previous AG opinion on the topic and let him know that I sought current guidance from DOJ on the matter. And finally, with our prodding, the U.S. Forest Service appraiser kept her word and released the invitation to bid for the appraisals for our proposed land exchange with the Forest Service. In the meantime, Mike has been working on the title issues surrounding the transaction. While we're still a long ways from the finish line, there's a good indication the transaction is actually progressing toward completion. So, thanks to everybody for their hard work. Thanks for staying safe. And that's the end of my report for the day.
Thanks, Tom. Is there anything that the board should be aware of with working remotely? Is that going well for BCPL? Anything you want to illustrate on that front?
I believe it is going well. We are doing a staff meeting remotely every Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock to check in with everybody and see how everybody's doing, both personally and professionally, and making sure that we're keeping those lines of communication open so that if one of us is working on something that touches somebody else, that we're staying abreast of each other. So far, Sarah, I believe things are working pretty well.
Okay. And then with regards to Senator Tiffany, is there anything the board can do or should do to help you address that inquiry?
I had forwarded to DOJ. The matter was assigned to two assistant attorneys general, and I'm awaiting their guidance on the matter. And I provided them with a copy of that published AG's opinion from 2010 and some other materials as well.
Okay, so you'll just keep us posted as that progresses.
I promise I will do that.
Great. Any questions for Tom? So my update, I first just want to thank the staff at BCPL. So Rich, Tom, and Denise for everything they've been doing this last month. As Josh and Doug, you heard, they've been really busy, whether it's with processing all the state trust fund loan programs. This is the season for that, working on the distribution, in addition to working remotely, the lands issue, and then on top of that, figuring out how could we possibly do this special distribution for our school. So there was a lot, and they really stepped up and I think delivered, and so I'm really grateful. I know that there was a lot of work that was done, and incredibly appreciative of what you all have been doing. So thank you. And then I also just want to thank Doug and Josh for your support in approving this special distribution. The calls that I have had, both with DPI and with media specialists, it's been really eye-opening in how much they need this money now more than ever. And so these resources are really going to be making a difference across the state, and appreciate your support and kind of thinking outside of the box to address needs that our school kids have in their e-learning challenges. So thank you to both of you, and we'll continue to keep you guys posted as we roll this money out and see how it's making a difference with public schools. So that is my update. Any other future agenda items?
None for me.
No, I'm okay.
All right. Is there a motion to adjourn?
This is Josh. I move to adjourn, and thank you, everybody, for all your work on these issues.
Doug, I second the comments, and I second the adjournment.
Great. All those in favor of adjournment, say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Doug.
Aye, Josh.
All right. The meeting is adjourned. Thanks, everyone, and please be safe.
Take care, everybody. Thank you.
Bye.
's this Rich? Yeah, it is.
Hi, Rich.
It said we were still being recorded, so I don't know if they have to push a button over there or what.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. It says we're being recorded.
So I thought that Tom, probably, I don't know if Tom's on or not.
Julie, are you on?
I'll just call back in a few minutes. How's that?
Yeah, it's weird. Julie's saying that she called back on, but Tom's not on.
I mean, it says the conference is being recorded, though, just FYI.
Right. So we should.
All right, let's all call out.
Maybe the original call never ended, right? So we should get off and then call back.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, bye.
Hey, is everybody still there?
Oh, we're going to start over, Tom, because it said it was still being recorded.
I'm trying to remember how to end the recording, but I don't.
I think if you just end the call, and then everybody will call back in.
Okay. All right. All right.